Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The WEEI Sports Radio Network. You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, welcome in. Brian Barrett with you. WEI Late Night with you until midnight. The number is 617-779-7937. 617-779-7937. This hour is brought to you by Greenside Services, the COVID-19 building, disinfecting, and cleaning experts. Okay, I hope you enjoyed Game 6 of the ALCS from 2004. One of the most important games in Red Sox history. I can still remember where I was watching it with my father as we celebrate Father's Day weekend. One of my brothers too little to stay up, but what an amazing game. I still cannot believe that that comeback happened. And I heard Mutt talking about it. It, to me, is more impressive than the 28-3 comeback the Patriots had against the Atlanta Falcons. You're talking about an Atlanta Falcons team that fell all over itself. They were part of, in my opinion, that game that the Patriots won against the Falcons. It was more about the Falcons choking than the Patriots coming back. I'm not taking anything away from the comeback with the Patriots, but from my perspective, that was more about the Falcons choking it away. How can you blow a 28-3 lead? With the Red Sox, it was just so damn impressive. Down 3-0 against that Yankees team with Sheffield and A-Rod and Jeter and Matsui, who was a Red Sox killer for all those years. For the Red Sox to beat that team 4 times in a row, after it looks like, it's just another season that's going to end ugly for the Red Sox. For them to come back from that, what an unbelievable team. What a gutty team. So I'll always remember where I was for Game 6. That unbelievable. 617-779-7937. All right, so from the positive to the negative, and that's everything that has happened with the coronavirus for the past week, but really even more specifically today. Because for about a month, I've been in a pretty positive state of mind with the coronavirus. This week, you had some things open up as part of phase two. You could dine outside if you wanted to. I personally did not, but you could have if you wanted to. And recently, we've been getting closer to the restart of both the NHL and the NBA seasons. Now, I get it, just the Stanley Cup playoffs, not an extended regular season, but 8 games in the NBA. And I'll get into baseball in greater detail, believe me, later on, because what a mess that is. But I was back in that mindset of, well, we're getting to talk about sports again. And remember, we had this whole conversation for about 5 days about the Celtics, because everybody's been high on the Celtics in terms of the national analysts. And we've been talking about, well, could this be good for the Celtics? They don't have to go to Toronto. They don't have to go to Milwaukee. They won't have to go to Philadelphia, because Philadelphia is 29-2. And we were starting to focus on the basketball. And then, of course, we had the stuff that was going on with Kyrie Irving. So that took away from the restart a little bit, but I still felt like everybody was on the other side of that thing, where most of the superstar players, as Adrian Wojnarowski outlined in his article a week ago today, most of the superstar players were still on board with playing. So it felt like, all right, you're still going to get the NBA back. And from a Bruins angle, I'm starting to think to myself, well, okay, maybe Char getting a little extra rest, Bergeron getting a little extra rest, Krejci getting a little extra rest, that's going to help them. They're an older team. Yeah, they were playing unbelievable. They were the best team in the NHL, but maybe the break could actually help them. I was trying to convince myself of that. But then you have now this day and really this pushback in the NBA in general, because now Kyrie Irving, obviously his gripe with returning had more to do with the issues we have in the country right now in terms of social injustice, etc. But with some of the players, it's about, well, can I have insurance if I return? And then They're starting to ask questions about the bubble. Well, if we go to the bubble, my family can't come for at least 5 weeks. You can't come until your family members cannot come to the bubble until after the first round of the playoffs. So a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo just had a kid. You're waiting 5 weeks to see your kid again, and then you can only have three additional members of your family come. So you were starting to have some real questions about, well, is the NBA really going to pull this off? And then this week you had the spike in Florida in terms of the amount of coronavirus patients in the area. Huge spike this week, right? And then today we have a bunch of guys. Auston Matthews of the Maple Leafs test positive. You have 11 players in the NHL that have tested positive. The league put out a statement today. In baseball, you have the Philadelphia Phillies and the Blue Jays closing down their facilities because of the coronavirus. Joel Sherman reporting from the New York Post, Major League Baseball is considering shutting down all spring training sites to cleanse and reestablish a system in which players will test regularly when they return. The Wall Street Journal, Jared Diamond, the rise in cases could force baseball to reconsider the bubble plan to have a season in 2020 with Southern California seen as a possible site. So now Major League Baseball, after what has happened over the past week, is considering maybe we have to go to the bubble plan like the NBA is going to, and very similar to the NHL. The NHL just has two hub cities, if you will, that they still have not ultimately determined yet. But nonetheless, two cities compared to the NBA's one, and Major League Baseball now apparently considering this because of the spikes in certain states, especially Florida, where a lot of the teams go for spring training. So you have all that with Major League Baseball. Now, we have this whole issue in and of itself on whether or not the players and the owners can agree on anything, and that's a whole different conversation that I'll get into greater detail in just a little bit. But now you're asking yourself, if you're Major League Baseball, are we actually going to be able to put this off? We've been fighting over money for all these weeks, and we don't even know if we're going to be able to pull this damn thing off. And then how about this? You have 23 players from Clemson. 23 players. And remember, this is a team that just played for the national championship. This is a team that won the national championship a year ago. So you're talking about one of the best programs in college football. 23 players tested positive for the coronavirus. Not three, not two, no, 23 players tested positive for the coronavirus. And for the most part, these players who are relatively healthy, 18 to 22-year-olds, they're going to be fine in the long run. But at the end of this, what's going to happen if this happens during a game week, right? A 49ers player tested positive for the coronavirus. And then it got onto the PGA Tour. Nick Watney tested positive. Brooks Koepka was talking about it. I was right next to him, talking to him yesterday. So at this point, I feel as pessimistic as I felt since the night that Rudy Gobert tested positive for the coronavirus. And remember that guy, the PA announcer in Oklahoma City, came onto the microphone. He scared everybody. Please leave the building. You are not in danger, but please leave the building. That's the last time I was this pessimistic about returning to sports, because I'm just wondering how this is all going to work now. So Andrea Kramer, great NFL reporter, and she did a bunch of games for Amazon with Hannah Storm over the past couple of years in terms of calling the play-by-play. She was on OMF today as their mystery guest, and she brought up the point, what if a receiver gets it and then all the receivers in that room gets the coronavirus? These are questions that you're going to have to ask yourself going forward. We're getting excited for restarting sports, but today was a very humbling day, I believe, for not only us as sports fans, but for the entire country in terms of getting ready for sports in general and the leagues. Major League Baseball today thinking about, oh, maybe we need a bubble. So if you're the NFL, think about it from that perspective. Think about it from a quarterback angle. What if you have the entire quarterback room test positive for the coronavirus? What do we do? What do we do in the NFL if the entire room tests positive for the coronavirus? The entire quarterback room, what do you do? Do you call up some guys that are in the XFL or that were in the XFL that is now defunct and get somebody from that league to come play? I just don't know what you do. It's unbelievable to think about the circumstances that could present themselves if these things happen. Bruce Arians is actually on record saying, and this is actually something that at the time I'm like, I kind of just glazed over it. But now that I think about it, it makes a lot of sense. Bruce Arians is thinking about having one of his quarterbacks just not be like around the team facility. So in case there's a spread of the coronavirus, he'll have a player that he can bring in that's been basically away from the rest of his teammates. Anthony Lynn mentioned the fact, what if my entire running back room gets COVID-19, who do you play? How do you go into a game where you don't have running backs? It's going to be incredibly difficult for all these different leagues to try to pull this off. And think about it in the NFL and in college football. You're talking about in college football traveling from campus to campus. And one of the things, Joe Klatt was on The Herd with Colin Cowherd today. One of the things that athletic directors Joe Klatt said it told him at the Power 5 schools, it's not that they're scared about playing other Power 5 schools. It's what about the schools that don't have the facilities and don't have the ability to isolate their players because they don't have the capability in the facilities to separate them from the rest of the campus. So if you're Alabama or you're Clemson, you're Michigan, you're one of these big programs, you're Notre Dame, and you're playing one of these schools that isn't big, like the Kent States of the world, Julian Edelman's alma mater, but if you're playing a team like Kent State, they're not going to have the same facilities. They can't isolate the players like you can. That's going to scare athletic directors, and that's going to scare coaches in terms of putting their team in harm's way, so to speak. You have UCLA today, the players coming out, and 30 players signing a document where essentially they're in a position where they are asking for basically a situation where you bring in a third party to make sure everything is handled well, which in my mind, I would do that if I was UCLA as well. And I would encourage a lot of other schools to do that because these college football coaches and these college universities are trying to win. It means more money for the university. The better your football program is, if you're the players, you want to make sure that somebody's protecting you. So it makes a lot of sense from that perspective as it pertains to the players. So these are just some of the things that you're thinking about now. And when you look at it from the NBA and the NHL, there's a lot of questions there just with the NBA in terms of the bubble. What if one of the players gets it there? I know Adam Silver a couple of weeks ago, he's on with the TNT guys, Shaq and Charles Barkley, etc., saying, I think we can contain this. Well, are you sure about that? Because you're talking about 23 players at Clemson testing positive for the coronavirus. Okay, so most of the teams are going to go to their home facilities, with the exception of the Toronto Raptors, who are going right to Florida. I believe they're going to the Florida Gulf Coast campus. And you're going to basically make sure that all your players are test negative for the coronavirus. Then they're all flying to this bubble area. And then you have workers there. How can we make sure that this does not spread? And what's going to happen if you're in the Eastern Conference Finals or the Western Conference Finals and Giannis Antetokounmpo tests positive or Chris Middleton tests positive? Or if you're the Celtics, if Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown test positive, what do you do? Do you put the series on hold until those players are healthy, or do you just say, hey, go ahead and play? It's one thing if it's one player, but in the NBA, it's magnified, right? Because those superstar players are the guys that win you championships. What if the Clippers are without Paul George for 3 games or Kawhi Leonard for 3 games? It just feels like, to me, I was getting super positive, and it felt like they were building up a lot of momentum to get sports back. But now, after everything that happened today, the Phillies closing down their facility, the Blue Jays closing down their facility, the NHL releasing a statement saying 11 players in the league have tested positive, including Austin Matthews of the Toronto Maple Leafs, one of the best players in the damn sport. When you look at the NBA, still not sure all these things that are going on with the bubble. Clemson had 23 players test positive. All this stuff that has just happened today. A member of the San Francisco 49ers test positive. It just makes me think it's going to be awfully difficult to pull this off. And the NFL and the college football, it's not like the NBA and the NHL. We're just trying to see if you can do this in bubble sites or hub cities in the case of the NHL. Imagine what the NFL and college football are going to try to put off. And now baseball today, after all this transpires with the Blue Jays and with the Phillies, etc., Major League Baseball is considering shutting everything down, cleansing everything, in the words of Joel Sherman from the New York Post, then restarting everything after they come up with new solutions to everything. And possibly, according to the Wall Street Journal, Jared Diamond reporting, that now MLB's considering a bubble city somewhere in Southern California. So that's where we're at now. One day, all this stuff has happened in terms of the coronavirus. So I feel really negative right now about sports getting back on track this year. It felt like there was a lot of momentum heading in the right direction. I felt great about it. But right now, I do not feel great about it whatsoever. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. The number is 617-779-7937. So if you want to weigh in on that, certainly welcome to do so. I feel more pessimistic. At the beginning of the week, I felt great. Now I just feel incredibly pessimistic about sports coming back. It's really deflating, too, because it's something that you were looking forward to. I remember when the NBA announced this idea that we're going to come back and there was going to be 8 games. I was thinking about, why are the Suns in this? Why are the Wizards in it? But I was excited to get basketball back. And then hearing all this stuff about the Celtics in terms of, well, okay, they can actually stay in the 3 seed, and they could actually be better off because the Sixers could actually enhance their seed, and that means the Celtics could actually match up with the Pacers. So that would mean the Celtics could avoid Milwaukee and Philadelphia. They would only have to play one of those teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, so you could have one of those teams take the other team out, and that, in my mind, is the biggest competition to the Celtics. I was starting to feel great about it, and then this happens over the past couple of days. Unbelievable. But I did want to get to some of the issues that Major League Baseball is having right now, because now that's one of the pressing topics today. As the night went on, first of all, most of the day was centered around the coronavirus and how it's really affecting the sports world. But now in Major League Baseball, as they continue to basically play volleyball with offers back and forth, now that's done. There's no more volleyballing back and forth. There's no more playing tennis back and forth. But besides, now they're just at a standstill. So the owners earlier in the week, just to kind of refresh your memory, they offer a 60-game season with full prorated salaries. That's what the owners offer the players. This is after Rob Manfred met with Tony Clark in Arizona. And on Wednesday, Rob Manfred releases a statement in which he says, "At my request, Tony Clark and I met for several hours yesterday in Phoenix. We left that meeting with a jointly developed framework that we agreed could form the basis of an agreement. I summarized that framework numerous times in the meeting and sent Tony a written summary today. Consistent with our conversations yesterday, I'm encouraging the clubs to move forward, and I trust Tony is doing the same." So again, this goes back to my theme of you felt positive about sports. So when Rob Manfred says that the other day, I'm thinking to myself, this is great. I'm thinking to myself, this is awesome. Looks like baseball has finally figured it out. But then what happens? Well, the Players Association counters with a 70-game season. USA Today's Bob Nightingale then reports the owners are livid at their proposal. No sign of compromise. John Heyman then reported, MLB owners are so upset by the players' counterproposal, which is said for about $300 million, that no response is expected to be immediate. Time is obviously getting short, so hopeful it is not too long, of course. So basically what John Heyman's explaining is the owners propose that 60-game schedule. The players come back with a 70-game proposal, and that's an extra $300 million for the owners to pay. Now, I don't know if that $300 million is a real number that the owners are putting out there, because at this particular point in time, it's really tough to trust either side at this point, but the owners have put out a lot of numbers over the past couple of weeks that are like, wait, does that make sense? And when you look at it, what does that really mean? An extra $300 million to the owners. If you break it down, you're talking about, what, $10 million per team, which is not that much. That Jackie Bradley Jr. makes $11 million this year. So it's not a whole lot of money for these teams, right? And Rob Manfred then spoke to reporters on Thursday, and John Heyman said, quote, "I don't know what Tony and I were doing there for several hours." This is via John Heyman, Rob Manfred given a statement. "I don't know what Tony and I were doing there for several hours going back and forth making trades if we weren't reaching an agreement." Then Tony Clark releases the statement. "In my discussions with Rob at Arizona, we explored a potential prorate framework, but I made clear repeatedly in that meeting and after it that there were a number of significant issues with what he proposed, in particular the number of games." So Rob Manfred's coming out earlier in the week saying, yep, we're all good. We got a deal. Me and Tony, we hashed this thing out. And then Tony Clark saying, what? I don't know what he's talking about. We never agreed on games. So then Ken Rosenthal tonight, MLB has told the Players Association it will not make a counteroffer to the union's 70-game proposal. Sources tell me and at Evan Drellick, league talking with owners this weekend to discuss its next options moving forward. Last MLB offer, 60 games, could try to implement in a 50-odd range. Okay, so then the Players Association responded. They released a statement saying that MLB has informed the association that it'll not respond to our last proposal and will not play more than 60 games. Our executive board will convene in the near future to determine next steps. Importantly, players remain committed to getting back to work as soon as possible. Okay, So now basically the owner said, no, we're good. We're rejecting your offer. And the owners are essentially saying we will not play more than 60 games. So now we're right back where we were at the beginning of the week. We thought we made progress, but no, we're right back where we are at the beginning of the week. And you would think that by Monday, we're going to have an answer one way or the other. Rob Manfred is either going to unilaterally say we're playing this amount of games, or both sides are actually going to come to an agreement. And I don't know, just call me crazy with this. You have the players proposing 70 games. You have the owners proposing 60 games. Can't we just come to some common ground? Like, this is going to sound like a radical idea. It's going to sound like it's totally out of left field, to use a baseball cliche. But if the owners want 60 games and the players want 70 games, could we agree on 65? Is it that difficult? Could we agree on 65? And the thing that irritates me about this as it pertains to Major League Baseball is, for the common person out there, a lot of people have lost their job. A lot of people have been furloughed. Some people are never getting their jobs back, right? Unfortunately, that's what's happened because of the coronavirus pandemic. And as we've seen this week, we have a spike all over the country in different states, right? So with all that going on, people trying to get jobs, people are losing their jobs, people trying to figure out, how am I going to make sure I can put food on the table for my family? You have this situation playing itself out. Now, I've been more player than owner. I believe the owners have been in the wrong more so than the players. But just from the players' perspective, too, it's not a good look. It's not a good look. You should have already come to this agreement. We should be talking about the possibility that you may need a bubble city more so than you guys still going back and forth about money. It really, really looks bad. It really looks bad. And by the time you come back, you would hope that the NBA is back and the NHL is back as well. So it takes a little steam away from you. You had the potential, if you were Major League Baseball, to really have the lights only on you for a month. But because you guys had to keep going back and forth and back and forth, this is where we're at. And nobody looks good. Now, in my mind, the players look better than the owners, but I'm not saying the players look good. Both sides look awful in this particular situation. And the fear that I have is you're going to piss off the casual fans so much that some of the casual fans aren't going to come back. Now, the diehard baseball fans like myself, I believe I missed like a total of 6 Red Sox games last year. I'm coming back no matter what. But that casual fan out there, you may be losing that person, which is really damaging to your sport. All right, a lot more to get into. I want to continue to talk about the issues in Major League Baseball. If you want to weigh in on how the coronavirus is now affecting the sports world, in my view, really bad day for sports, and I'm very pessimistic about these leagues getting back underway in 2020 at this point. If you want to weigh in on that, certainly welcome to do so. The number 617-779-7937. I do want to get to the back and forth between Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant. We'll get to that at some point. The number 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight, and we'll get you a trending in just a second here.
Don't miss a minute of your favorite WEEI shows by using the rewind feature in your radio.com app. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Major League Baseball has informed the Players Association it'll not make a counteroffer to the union's 70-game proposal. The owners had previously offered a 60-game schedule. The Players Association then released a statement saying, quote, MLB has informed the association that it'll not respond to our latest proposal and will not play more than 60 games. Our executive board will convene in the near future to determine next steps. Importantly, players remain committed to getting back to work as soon as possible. A rough day in sports with the coronavirus, as we were just talking about. In baseball, the Phillies are closing their spring training facility after 5 players and 3 staff members tested positive. ESPN's Jeff Passan reports the Blue Jays also closed down their spring training facility after a player showed coronavirus symptoms. The New York Post, Joel Sherman reporting Major League Baseball is strongly considering closing all 30 camps again to cleanse and reestablish a system in which players will test regularly when they return. Nick Watney became the first player on the PGA Tour to test positive for COVID-19. He withdrew from the RBC Heritage before his Friday afternoon tee time. Watney did play on Thursday. By the way, Webb Simpson has the lead there, 12 under par. The NHL released a statement saying a total of 11 players have tested positive for the coronavirus. The Lightning had 3 players and additional staff members test positive. Tampa decided to close down its facilities. The Toronto Sun reports Maple Leaf star Austin Matthews has tested positive for COVID-19. I didn't mean to be so negative, but it's kind of the news here. That's what's trending now on WEI and WEI.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
All right, Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. The number is 617-779-7937. Are you deflated? Are you upset with the way everything's going the past couple of days with the coronavirus? Do you feel like it's going to be awfully difficult for sports to resume in 2020? That's where I'm at right now. The number is 617-779-7937. Now, I do want to get back to Major League Baseball because this is incredible to me. And I kind of gave you the nuts and the bolts of what's going on between both sides. But from my perspective, does anybody look like a bigger clown than Rob Manfred? This is unbelievable to me. So let's just lay this out here. So Rob Manfred comes out on Wednesday and he says, essentially, Tony Clark and I, we met, we're close to a deal. We got a deal basically done. We got the framework of our deal done. Great. Everybody's pumped up. Finally, baseball has figured it out. We're going to get the baseball season. They finally figured out the number of games. Great. Awesome. Okay, the next day, Tony Clark says, no, we didn't agree on anything. We didn't agree on games. I don't know what Rob's talking about. He basically said, Rob Manfred's lying. That's not true. We never agreed on anything. Could you look any worse than that? Okay, and this is the same guy. Let's not dismiss this. Remember what he did a couple of weeks ago? Or I should say, about a week and a half ago now? So the commissioner of the league, Rob Manfred, had his draft a week ago Thursday. At least that's when it started. Rob Manfred is on the pre-draft show, however you want to call it, with Carl Ravitch of ESPN. He says 100% confident, he is 100% confident that there would be baseball played this year. Okay, the very next day, or I should say 2 days later, Mike Greenberg does this special on ESPN about the return of sports, which is kind of funny. All these other leagues, they have a plan on how they're returning to sports. Baseball hadn't agreed, still have not agreed on a deal yet between the players and the owners. Rob Manfred says a couple of days later, I'm not confident. I think there is a real concern. So you went from being 100% confident that there was going to be baseball to a couple of days later, you're not very confident. You said, oh, we got an agreement done. Tony and I met in Arizona. We got the framework of a deal done. And then the next day, Tony Clark released a statement saying, no, we never agreed on games. Hey, this guy looks like an absolute clown right now. Absolute clown. Tell me what he's doing. And tell me who is around him right now who is giving him advice from a PR perspective. Does anybody work with this guy and tell him, hey, probably don't say that. Probably don't say that. Because here's the thing. As it pertains to the Tony Clark issue where he puts it out there that the framework of the deal is done. And then Tony Clark says, no, it's not. Okay, so one of two things is true. The first one is Rob Manfred knows that they haven't agreed on games yet, and he's putting it out there to put pressure on the Players Association. Okay, that's the first possibility. Or the second possibility is he actually thinks that they agreed on the framework of the deal. So either one is really bad. The first one is slimy, that basically it looks like he's trying to pull the rug out from underneath Tony Clark. That's what the first one looks like. You're trying to pull a fast one over on Tony Clark, trying to put pressure on the players publicly to make it seem like you guys have a deal done when you don't, to make the players look bad, right? That's the first possibility of what Rob Manfred was doing. Hey, I'm going to make the players look really bad here. I'm going to make the Players Association look really bad. So that's not a good look for Rob Manfred if he did that. And the second one is even worse because he just looks dumb. If he was actually in a meeting with Tony Clark and he came away from the meeting thinking that they had agreed on games, well, guess how that looks? That just looks absolutely dumb. That looks really, really dumb. And by the way, here was Rob Manfred earlier this week talking about the situation with Tony Clark and the Players Association.
I had been hopeful that once we got to common ground on the idea that we were going to pay the players full prorated salary, that we would get some cooperation in terms of proceeding under the agreement that we negotiated with the MLBPA on March 26th. Unfortunately, over the weekend, while Tony Clark was declaring his desire to get back to work, the union's top lawyer was out telling reporters, players, and eventually getting back to owners that as soon as we issued a schedule, as they requested, they intended to file a grievance claiming they were entitled to an additional $1 billion. Obviously, that sort of bad faith tactic makes it extremely difficult to move forward in these circumstances.
Yeah, so that's where we're at about a week and a half ago, and then apparently they were in a better position. But that's basically Rob Manfred saying he didn't like the way that the players and Tony Clark were handling this. And then remember, the Players Association, the players themselves, they don't look good either because they kept saying when and where, and the owners put out an offer and then they up it to 70 games. So it's not exactly like the players are living up to their end of this as well, because they're the ones that kept saying when and where, when and where. Remember all the players putting that on their social media accounts? When and where, when and where, when and where? Okay, so Major League Baseball came up with an idea and you guys said no. But Manfred, I just don't understand it. Either he's incredibly stupid or he's incredibly slimy. Either one looks really bad in my mind. He said, at my request, Tony Clark and I met for several hours yesterday. This is on Wednesday. We left the meeting with a jointly developed framework that we agreed could form the basis of an agreement. The very next day, the Players Association counters with a 70-game offer to what the players or what the owners were offering, which is 60 games. And then you had the statement, essentially from Tony Clark, where he said, in my discussions with Rob at Arizona, we explored a potential prorate framework, but I made it clear repeatedly in that meeting and after it that there were a number of significant issues with what he proposed, in particular, the number of games. It is unequivocally false to suggest that any tentative agreement or other agreement was reached in that meeting. In fact, in conversations for the last 24 hours, Rob invited a counterproposal for more games that he would take back to the owners. We submitted that counterproposal today. So that makes it look even worse for Rob Manfred. Basically, Tony Clark saying, in fact, during the meeting, Rob Manfred told me, hey, give us your counterproposal. So Manfred looks like basically he's just trying to pull a fast one over on the player. So this whole situation has just been a mess from the beginning. And it's really sad that we're now at this point where basically Rob Manfred's going to have to unilaterally come up with something in terms of a 48-game season, unless the players, they eventually just say, you know what, we'll take the 60 games. Either way, it's a mess. Both sides clearly have been at odds the whole time. It's been played out in the media the entire time from the beginning, which in my mind was a mistake to begin with, that they, from the beginning, were basically negotiating through the media. It took until Tuesday for Rob Manfred and Tony Clark to at least have a productive conversation. And even that productive conversation, at least it was perceived to be productive at the time, look at what that turned into. It turned into Rob Manfred basically saying, Tony Clark lied to me, and Tony Clark basically coming back and saying, well, actually, no, he lied to me. Just a complete mess. What a dumpster fire it's been for Major League Baseball. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you until midnight. One of the things I do like in this, in terms of if we ever get a season in Major League Baseball, if that's getting closer, one of the things I do like is the fact that they're going to have the DH in both leagues, which, thank you. Thank you very much. It took this long to do that. I cannot stand watching pitchers hit. What's good about that? Like, it's one thing back in the day where pitchers actually had the capability to hit. I know every once in a while there's a couple of pitchers out there that can actually swing a bat. Madison Bumgarner being one of them. Zach Greinke being one of them. But for the most part, these guys can't swing the bat. So I know there's more of a strategical element in the National League with the double switches, etc. But does anybody enjoy watching one of those pitchers stand in the batter's box? Like, maybe it's funny every once in a while, but for the most part, it's just not fun to watch whatsoever. Why would I want to watch a guy that can't hit? Not to mention the fact that this is actually better for the players to have an extra in the National League that's basically an extra slugger on the roster, right? to go on to your team. So it's good from that perspective as well. And I know they've talked about expanding the playoffs in Major League Baseball as well. Now, it would make sense this year in a shortened season. Certainly it would make sense because this is a weird year in Major League Baseball. And I know we've talked about it in the NBA and the Stanley Cup playoffs, if there would be an asterisk. Well, in Major League Baseball, there would be an asterisk. There's no doubt about it, because at this point, we're not going to get, at most, we're going to get, what, 60 games now? You can't tell me that whoever wins the World Series this year was the deserving champion or the definitely the best team in baseball. You can't tell me that. They were the best team with this set of circumstances. Just to put it into the proper context, the team that won the World Series last year, the Washington Nationals, they were 19-31 after 50 games, and they turned out to be the best team in baseball. And really, they deserved like a ring and a half because they were dealing with the cheating Houston Astros, right? They were dealing with that team. So the fact that you had to overcome, which we think the Astros are probably still doing a little bit of that cheating, right? So they were able to overcome that Astros team, not to mention it was a great Astros team, despite the fact they were cheating. They were really good. Did they really have to cheat? Well, they did. But nonetheless, when you look at it from the Nationals' perspective, they wouldn't be in the playoffs this year. So the best team in baseball last year wouldn't be in the playoffs this year because of the fact that we have this shortened season. So in my mind, there will be an asterisk on this season because that's part of what makes baseball such a grind is the 162-game schedule, right? It's not fluky for teams to make it into the postseason. Now, sometimes crazy things happen once we get to the postseason, like a pitcher can just completely take over, right? We've seen it before. John Lester in 2013 was by far the best pitcher in the world for that postseason run. Now, he wasn't the best pitcher during the regular season, but for that run, he was the best pitcher. You look at a team like the San Francisco Giants, who got into the postseason as a wild card team a couple of times. Madison Bumgarner just goes on this dominant streak, and the Giants end up winning the World Series as the last wild card team in the National League. So once you get in, yes, some strange things can happen, but it's not fluky for a team to make it into the postseason. This feels like with an expanded playoff field, like the players and the owners are talking about if we get this thing on track come Monday. So with the expanded playoff field, it feels more NBA-y to me, right? It feels more like the NBA than anything else where it's like, oh, everybody gets in. It's like, Oprah, you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. Everybody's getting in, and that's not that exciting to me. Like, I really do enjoy the playoffs in Major League Baseball. This just seems like it could be completely fluky when hopefully we get a season underway. The other thing I would say, though, as it pertains to the Red Sox, this would be interesting for them. This would be good for them, right? Because if you say, all right, in a 162-game season, not many people are predicting the Red Sox to go to the playoffs, right? Because you don't have Chris Sale, who had the Tommy John surgery. Mookie Betts is now playing with the Dodgers, along with David Price. And say what you want about David Price, he was one of the best pitchers in your rotation last year. But you're coming into the season with Erod, who I like Erod. He had a great season last year, took a step forward. But after that, what do you have in your rotation? Nathan Eovaldi, did you see him last year? I get he was hurt, but when he came back, he wasn't good. Martin Perez, who had an ERA over 5 last year, wasn't a very good pitcher, right? But now, when you look at it, it's a sprint, right? So even the teams that have really good rotations, it's going to be awfully difficult for those teams, if we do get a season underway, to have the rotation lined up. And what teams are going to have to do is they're going to have to do these bullpen games with openers like we saw the Red Sox do a number of times last year. So it puts you at a little bit more of an even playing field. And we know the Red Sox as a lineup, even without Mookie Betts, this team can get awfully hot for 40 games or so. They could put up a really good number in terms of the run production when you still have Devers, who was one of the best players in all of Major League Baseball last year. Same thing can be said about Xander Bogaerts. We know J.D. Martinez is a genius as a hitter. Those are three guys that not many teams in baseball have. So this Red Sox team could actually really benefit from the shortened season, if you will. They could somehow make a run to the postseason when, if they actually played a 162-game season, nobody would be picking them to go to the playoffs because they just lost their best pitcher. They just lost David Price, who has at least been good the past 2 years for the Red Sox. And I understand you can say all this stuff about the issues that they've had with Price over the years. You lost the MVP of the American League from 2 years ago, but you could see this team in a shortened season actually making a run to the postseason. And if you're one of the teams that's the favorites, right, like a team like the Yankees, it does not look good for them because, yeah, okay, you should make it into the playoffs, But what happens if you start the season off slow? You can get yourself in a whole lot of trouble if you're the Yankees, a team that's a favorite to win the World Series. And again, another thing that looks bad for Major League Baseball is a week ago you have a report coming out that it looks like Rob Manfred was hiding some of the reporting into the Yankees cheating. Doesn't look good for Major League Baseball as this whole thing is going on as well. All right, the number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you until midnight. A lot more to get into. Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant going back and forth on social media. Perkins addressed that today. But coming up next, I want to get to the list that Chris Sims is putting together. He's ranking the top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL. Again, I don't know how he came up with 40 as the number. It would make sense if he did it as like the top 15 or 20 quarterbacks in the NFL, but the top 40, a lot of those guys aren't even going to play. But nonetheless, he came up with his top 40 quarterbacks. You are not going to believe the players he has ahead of Tom Brady. We'll get to it next. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEEI.
You're locked in to the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
I think this is one of the 10 best quarterbacks in football. You know, I'd like to give the big Chris Sims signal to everybody out there and go, yes, the things he can do, Mike, on a football field are special. And he is one of those guys that if he's the quarterback of your team, when you step on the field, you go, we got a chance to win the football game. Stats don't tell the story about Cam Newton. The amount of pressure he puts on a defense because of all the different things he's done, he makes defenses simplify. He's one of the greatest power runners in football. He'll sit in the pocket all day long and throw 40-yard lasers on the money, which is sometimes could be a negative. I think he's a game changer. He's an organization changer. He can do things that other guys in football can't. Yeah, maybe he's not as good as dissecting a defense like a Drew Brees or a Tom Brady, but he can do a lot of other things on the field that are special and can really help out a team and an offense.
Unbelievable. Brian Barrett with you up until midnight. That is Chris Sims. He's ranking his top 40 quarterbacks in the NFL. He has Cam Newton at number 10. Hold your breath for a second. He has Tom Brady at 15th. So he has Cam Newton entering the 2020 season as a better quarterback than Tom Brady. What do you think of that? 617-779-7937. And I should also mention, he has Cam Newton in front of Drew Brees. Chris Sims has Drew Brees at 16th on his list. He has Tom Brady at 15th. He's got Cam Newton as the 10th best quarterback in the NFL. And it almost feels like to me, and I'm lower on Brady the most, I do not believe that Brady's going to have this great, outstanding year in Tampa Bay. I saw him miss a lot of throws at the end of last season, and it wasn't all about the offensive line and the weapons. I saw Brady take a step back. And I believe Brady's going to get off to a nice start in Tampa. But then when you get down the stretch of the season, Brady's going to struggle, just like he did last year. Last five games, 199 yards per game, completed just 58% of his passes. So I'm lower on Brady than most. But to put Cam Newton in front of Tom Brady and Drew Brees, who completed 74% of his passes last year and had a 116 quarterback rating. Drew Brees broke the record for like the third consecutive season in terms of completion percentage. He was that good last year. He's got Cam Newton ahead of Drew Brees on this list. It's just ridiculous. Cam Newton. So he said that he thinks Cam Newton's going to be healthy. Well, let's look around the NFL right now. Nobody has signed him. He had shoulder surgery 2 years ago, and that cost him the end of the 2018 season. Then in 2019, he starts the season, and then he needs to have Lisfranc surgery on his foot, which again is a surgery that really affects like NBA players more so than NFL players. We've actually seen it end a lot of NBA players' careers. Now, Kevin Durant had it, and he bounced back fine. Now he's had the Achilles recently, but for the most part, he's been fine since the Lisfranc surgery. But again, this is a serious procedure that Cam Newton had, and it's really important that his feet are healthy considering the fact that he runs the ball all the time. But I just don't know how you can put Cam Newton ahead of Tom Brady and Drew Brees considering we don't know what the player is going to look like in 2020 because of all these health issues, and no team yet has been willing to take a chance on a guy that was the MVP of the league back in 2015 and still relatively young, although 31 for Cam Newton is older than most 31s because he takes an insane amount of hits because he runs the ball so much. And look, that's part of what made Cam Newton a great player for a number of years in Carolina. That's part of what made Cam Newton the MVP of the NFL. But to project Cam Newton to be better than Tom Brady and Drew Brees is asinine at this particular point in time. He doesn't even have a team yet. We don't even know if Cam Newton's going to have a starting job in 2020. Right now, there's not a lot of teams that can offer him that. Who can offer him that? Jacksonville? But if you're Jacksonville, is that a good idea? He may win you too many games if you're on the Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields sweepstakes, so to speak. But just to look at this list. So he's got Drew Brees 16th, Tom Brady 15th, Big Ben at 14th, a guy coming off an elbow procedure, Kirk Cousins at 13th, Kyler Murray at 12th, coming off his rookie season, Ryan Tannehill at 11th, Cam Newton, as we mentioned, at 10th. He's got Matt Stafford, another guy coming off a significant injury, at 9th. Dak Prescott at 8th, which him and the team can't even figure out the contract. Matt Ryan at 7th. I like Matt Ryan a lot. And 6th is Carson Wentz on this list. So you have Kyler Murray in front of Brady after 1 year. You realize that Kyler Murray only threw for 232 yards per game last year, right? So it wasn't as if he took the league by storm. It's not like, remember the first year Pat Mahomes was a starter, which was technically his second year in the NFL, but it was his first year as a full-time starter. He got one start his rookie year in week 17. Then he started all of 2018. He was the MVP, threw 50 touchdown passes. It wasn't like Kyler Murray was Pat Mahomes last year to the point where you could predict him to be this great quarterback entering 2020. So I don't understand how you put Kyler Murray in front of Brady at this point. And again, this is coming from somebody that thinks Brady's going to take a step back. That's aggressive, putting Kyler Murray ahead of Tom Brady. He has Ryan Tannehill ahead of Tom Brady. Okay, Ryan Tannehill led the league in passer rating last year. He averaged 228 yards per game, which is fine, but the rest of his career has not been great. So in terms, if you look at Ryan Tannehill's quarterback rating from last year, it's up 25% from his, or 25 points rather, from his average. So he basically had one really good year in the NFL, and now all of a sudden that's the player that we should expect going forward. Well, let me ask you this. If Ryan Tannehill was so good, why did he barely throw the ball in the postseason? I get Derrick Henry can run the football, but how come he couldn't do anything against the Chiefs when they asked him to throw the damn football? I don't know how you put Tannehill, one-year wonder, ahead of Tom Brady. Dak Prescott? Okay, yes, he's had some big regular season numbers. But you realize that Dak Prescott last year was 1-6 against teams that were in the postseason, so he can't beat good teams. Carson Wentz, unbelievable talent. Nobody would dispute that. In fact, if you go back to 2017... he would have won the MVP of the NFL if he never got hurt. He's the reason the Eagles were the number one seed in the NFC. He has not been the same player since he came back from his original injury. And how about this? He hasn't finished any of the past three seasons. Now, he did start the playoff game against the Seattle Seahawks last year, but what happened? Ended up with another injury. We can debate the fact that there was a cheap shot by Jadeveon Clowney, but the point being, three consecutive seasons, Carson Wentz has not been on the field when the Eagles season ended. Shouldn't durability factor into this? If we're going at recent history, the past three seasons, Carson Wentz has not finished the season. I don't know how you can put a guy on this list at number six that hasn't finished any of the past three seasons. So now projecting forward, we should say that he's going to be healthy. Well, he's told us by his recent play that more likely than not, he's going to get injured 3 years in a row. Matthew Stafford. Okay, unbelievable talent. I'm not going to dispute the arm and all that, but a lot of guys have a great arm. So did Jeff George. Matthew Stafford, career record, 69-79-1. He's under 500. Oh, he plays for a garbage Lions organization. Okay, well, at some point, if the quarterback's that damn good, you're going to win more games, and you're not going to be 10 games under 500 for your career. And you're going to have, call me crazy, one playoff win in your career. Matthew Stafford doesn't have any. Doesn't have a single playoff win in his career. And again, going back to Cam Newton, no one has signed the guy. So the entire NFL isn't sure yet. Chris Sims is. I just don't understand how he can make that claim. But it's ridiculous. You're talking about Matthew Stafford coming off a back injury who's never won a playoff game. Carson Wentz is never on the damn field. Dak is 1-6 rather against winning teams last year, playoff teams. And Kyler Murray threw for 232 yards a game. So if you want to say that Tom Brady's going to take a step back, fine. I'm on board with that. I agree with that. And I'm fine if you want to put Kirk Cousins ahead of him because he's going to have really good numbers. He does every year. I'm fine if you're going to put Matt Ryan ahead of Tom Brady because Matt Ryan puts up really good stats on a year-to-year basis. Now, I would like to see him do a little bit more in the postseason. So I'm fine if you're going to throw those guys ahead of Tom Brady. Okay. But durability has to be important with Wentz and with Newton. Dak hasn't proven it at a big level. And when you look at those things that we're pointing out, durability, not winning at a high enough level, I just don't feel like you can put those guys ahead of Tom Brady, especially when these guys have a track record of not performing in big games. Dak Prescott has a record of not performing against good teams. Matthew Stafford has a record of playing in irrelevant football games. The guy barely makes it into the postseason, and when he has, he doesn't win when he gets there. How can I possibly put that guy ahead of Tom Brady? Even if I believe Tom Brady's going to take a step back, at least I know that Tom Brady can perform at the highest level, unlike Matthew Stafford. Kyler Murray, 1 year as a rookie that wasn't even that good. It would be one thing if this was an unbelievable rookie season like we saw Deshaun Watson in his rookie year before he tore the ACL. Okay, I could understand if it was that type of performance to project that player to be better than Tom Brady. But that Kyler Murray we saw last year, and I like Kyler Murray as a player, but I'm not willing to say, oh, based on what he did last year, he's going to be better than Tom Brady. And the biggest joke of all this is the fact that these guys are ahead of Drew Brees. Drew Brees, and this is, by the way, this is before everything with the Anthem situation with Drew Brees. So this isn't like Chris Sims was projecting that the Saints are going to have this big division or this big divide in their locker room. It isn't like that. This is, he ranked Drew Brees 16th on this list before all that happened with Drew Brees and everything that went on with the comments that he made about the protest during the national anthem. So it wasn't like that. But Drew Brees legitimately had a 116 quarterback rating, which is absolutely incredible last year. Not to mention the fact that he led the NFL for the third straight year in completion percentage with a league record 74%. So to put these guys, Cam Newton coming off an injury, even Ben Roethlisberger coming off an injury, Matthew Stafford coming off an injury, Kyler Murray coming off one rookie year, to put all those guys ahead of Drew Brees too, that's preposterous. That is asinine. Now, the one thing I'll give Chris Sims credit for, there's a way to get attention. Like, if he just put Drew Brees in, like, his normal spot, fifth or sixth, and he put Tom Brady somewhere in the top 10, probably not going to cause a whole lot of controversy. But when you put these guys that low, well, it brings a little bit more interest in your list. If your list is just a normal list, people aren't going to say, well, you're crazy. But now that the list is this out of control, people are going to talk about Chris Sims' list. So I guess he won because I'm talking about his list right now. So I guess he got me. By the way, his podcast is called Chris Sims Unbuttoned, because he buttons his shirt all the way to the top. It's a horrible look, but he's Chris Sims Unbuttoned is the name of his podcast. Absolutely wild list. Wild list. That, what do you make of Chris Sims having Tom Brady ranked as the 15th best quarterback in the NFL and Cam Newton, who doesn't have an employer right now, as the 10th best quarterback in the NFL, not to mention he's coming off Lisfranc foot surgery? Certainly welcome to weigh in on that. The number 617-779-7937. I do want to get to Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant. They have a big beef going on right now, and Perk responded to Kevin Durant calling him a sellout. You do not want to miss this. We'll get to it next right here on WEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.